Hello and welcome to Vanguard Audiobooks. Today we're going to do Chapter 44 of Henry Ford's Unabridged, The International Jew. Are the Jews victims or persecutors? Let's get right into it. But first, I'll say as I always do, my name is Alex Linder, and my forum is vnnforum.com. And at vnnforum.com, you can find everything that we record as part of our free online educational college that we style the Learning College, without debt, without drunkenness, without falling off of balconies 5 or 6 floors up, as often happens at formal accredited colleges. We offer you nothing but true white education, allowing you to place for the first time your life in a white context so that you have an intellectual understanding of what is going on in the world around you. We do that by reading old, established text of great value, and The International Jew by Henry Ford was compiled by his researchers at the Dearborn Independent about 95 years before when I'm reading this, in 1920 and 1921, and he described Jews when all these articles that appeared over 2 years in his newspaper were collected into a book of 4 volumes, 80 chapters. He described Jews as the world's foremost problem. And they are hardly less so 100 years later. So chapter 44, the Jews victims or persecutors? And it's going to begin with a few quotes here. Half of Christendom worships a Jew. The other half worships a Jewess. Jewish editorial, Jesus and Mary, obviously. Quote, if the gospel story is correct, Judas was a pretty decent sort of fellow. It was only after he had become a convert to Christianity that he became that which has made his memory an accursed thing for 1900 years. End quote. That's from a Jewish editorial. Quote, our land is frequently called a Christian nation. No doubt the majority of our citizens believe this. No less than an authority than Justice Brewer of the Supreme Court so expressed himself in 1892. But the statement is clearly false. This is not a Christian nation. In inspiration, at least, it is a Hebrew nation, for the Constitution which we now enjoy traces back to the Hebrew Commonwealth. Jewish editorial. Like Christians, Jews like to claim credit for everything. Monotheism, the creation of science, etc., etc. From the minutes of a meeting of the Committee on the Families of the New York Board of Child Welfare. These are some, like a transcript, I guess. Mr. Hebbard, H-E-B-B-A-R-D, quote, that is one of the things I have in mind. And again, this is from the notes from a meeting, from a transcript of the notes of a meeting of the Committee on Families of the New York Board of Child Welfare. Mr. Hebbard, that is one of the things I have in mind, that a widow brings deliberately into her home a nameless child, and the inevitable consequence of that is that her legitimate children are always thereafter pointed out. Miss Sophie Irene Loeb. As far as nameless children are concerned, Christ himself was a nameless child. Let us get away from nameless children. Dr. Dirvoch, D-I-R-V-O-C-H. I think that where there are 3 or 4 children in a home, and a little stranger enters that home without a father, you are corrupting the morals of those legitimate children by permitting them to remain in such surroundings. Miss Loeb, I say to you that this committee, if it takes such an attitude as that, is 100 years behind the times. Mr. Cunyon, C-O-U-N-N-I-O-N, anything against purity is immoral. Miss Loeb, what has that to do with the question of purity? Was the mother of Christ pure? Mr. Cunyon, certainly. Miss Loeb, he had no name. Mr. Cunyon, you can't bring that in here. We believe he was conceived without sin. Mr. Menahan, to Miss Loeb, that is very wrong to make that statement. Cited in a letter of complaint to Mayor Hyland. Okay, that was another selection. Another quote here from a Jewish editorial. Quote, the intimate relation of church and state in the great non-sectarian United States of America received direct demonstration on August 12, 1913, when a deputy sergeant-at-arms of the Senate was hurriedly sent out to get a preacher of any old denomination to open the Senate with a prayer. The session opening an hour earlier than usual, the regular chaplain was not at hand, but with still 2 minutes to spare, the deputy returned in an automobile, hurried to the vice president's office and introduced the Reverend Dr. C. Albert Homas of Canonsburg, Pennsylvania, to Mr. Marshall just in time for the vice president to lead the way into the Senate chamber to open the session at 11 o'clock, and once again the Union was saved. We shudder to think what might have happened if no preacher had been captured in time to open the session with a prayer. Jewish editorial. And a couple more from the Jewish editorials. Quote, President Wilson, in his inaugural address, said, "The firm basis of the government is justice, not pity. This is sound Jewish doctrine as laid down by Moses and the prophets in contradistinction to the doctrine of love as attributed to Jesus. This coming from so good a churchman as President Wilson might be a little surprising were it not that it is a well-known fact that whenever our Christian brethren want to talk to reasoning men, they go to the Old Testament for their inspiration." Jewish editorial. And another from a Jewish editorial, two more at least on this page. President Wilson at his inaugural gave another instance of the well-known fact that in solemn moments when they need comfort and inspiration, Christians turn to the Old Testament and not to the New. So President Wilson, when he kissed the Bible after taking the inaugural oath, selected the passage Psalm 46. Jewish editorial. Quote, reference has frequently been made in these columns to a number of addresses made by the late Isaac M. Wise at the celebration in honor of his 80th birthday anniversary, in the course of which he predicted that in a quarter of a century from that date, 1899, there would be practically nothing left in Protestant Christianity of a belief in the divinity of Jesus Christ or the distinctive dogmas of Christianity, and that all Protestant Christians, by whatever name they call themselves, would be substantially Jews in belief. To anyone who notes the signs of the times, it is apparent that this prophecy is being rapidly fulfilled. The Jesus superstition and the fantastic dogmas built upon his supposed divine origin die but slowly, but that they are dying is nevertheless apparent. Jewish editorial. The subject of this article is Religious Prejudice and Persecution. Are the Jews victims or persecutors? A study of history and of contemporary Jewish journalism shows that Jewish prejudice and persecution is a continuous phenomenon wherever the Jews have attained power, and that in neither action nor word has any disability placed upon the Jew equaled the disabilities he has placed and still contemplates placing upon non-Jews. It is a rather startling reversal of all that we have learned from our Judaized histories, but nevertheless it seems to be the truth. Jews persecute non-Jews. Jews are not persecuted. Jews claim they are persecuted while they persecute others. Attention is once more called to the fact that the Jews themselves are not raising the cry of religious persecution, quote-unquote, here or elsewhere, but they are allowing their Gentile fronts to do it for them, just as they have not denied the statements made in the series. Among themselves, they freely admit to most of them, but let Gentile fronts do it for them. The Jews would not be averse to raising the cry of religious persecution, perhaps, provided they could make it stand, were they not afraid that it would call attention to their own persecuting activities. But their Gentile fronts have brought that upon them. There is no Christian church that the Jews have not repeatedly attacked. They have attacked the Catholic Church. This is of special interest just now when Jewish agents are doing their utmost to arouse Catholic sentiment in their favor by circulating charges which these agents personally know to be false. The Dearborn Independent has perfect confidence in the information which Catholic leaders may have on the Jewish question. On this subject, the Catholic priesthood is not misled. Examples of this are numerous. Half of Christendom worships a Jewess, quote unquote, is not a statement but a slur flung by Jewish men who say in the ritual of morning prayer, quote, "Blessed art thou, O Lord our God, King of the universe, who hast not made me a woman," unquote. The Talmudist discussion of the Virgin Mother are often vile. The Christian festivals, whose preservation is due to the Catholic custom and conscience, are all attacked by the Jews. The American Israelite, whose great prestige in American Jewry is due to its having been founded by Rabbi Isaac M. Wise, opposed the establishment of Columbus Day and berated Governor Hughes for signing the law and making it a holiday in New York. The act that established it deserved, quote, the contempt of thinking men, unquote. Why? Is not the discovery of America a memorable event? Yes, but Columbus was a Catholic. However, in recent months, the Jews are proving him to have been a Jew, so we may expect someday to see Columbus Day insisted upon with Jewish rites. So like the queers, the Jews like to go back and claim that all these famous men were actually Jews, if they have any tangential connection to Jews. The Catholic Columbian made editorial reference to the increasing Jewish influence on the American press in these words, quote, Jewry is getting its grip on the news of this country, as it is on Reuters and the Havas, H-A-V-A-S, agency in Europe. A perfectly polite and true observation. But the Jewish editorial thunderer came back, quote, The Columbian, in its sneaking, Jesuitical way, does not mention the fact that these, the Jewish, papers are the very cleanest in the country. The Columbian cannot point to a single daily owned by one of its co-religionists that begins to compare with the above papers. The sweet spirit here, evidenced, is very significant today when an appeal is being made to create a strong pro-Jewish Catholic sentiment. If there is in the world any extra-ecclesiastical undertaking by Catholics which has won the undivided approval of the Christian world, as the Passion Play of Oberammergau has done, that's the small village in Germany where they put on Christ making the various stations, dragging the cross, and the reenactment of the Easter in the play. And the Jews have whined, or I suppose he's going to say they were whining back then about the anti-Semitism of this reenactment. And today, and because it blamed, per the text, it blamed Christ's murder on the Jews. But Jews today claim that's anti-Semitic. And that everybody, so they've got the Christians now, all their Christian tools to say, well, no, everybody killed Jesus, or the Romans killed Jesus. Those are two acceptable answers. But not the Jews killed Jesus. Even though it literally says in the text, his blood be on us and our children, is a direct quote attributed to the Pharisees, who told Pontius Pilate, the Roman governor, to kill Jesus rather than Barabbas the thief. Right? So even when they're such brazen liars, regardless of whether any of this actually happened, and I tend to believe it didn't happen, regardless of whether it happened or not, they, in books written by Jews, in books edited by Jews, quote Jews saying that they killed him. So you can't turn around and then say, oh, well, no, it was the Romans or it was blah, blah, blah. The Roman had formal authority, but the Roman threw it up to the mob. It was the Pharisees who wanted Jesus killed. And they are just absolutely thoroughgoingly dishonest, straight through the marrow. They're a race of liars. So, he says, if there's anything that all Christians agree that they like, it's the Passion Play of Oberammergau. That's the little German village, Oberammergau. If there's anything that has won the undivided approval other than that, I don't know what it is, he says. Yet in a volume entitled A Rabbi's Impressions of the Oberammergau Passion Play, Rabbi Joseph Krauskopf, D.D. of Philadelphia, has stigmatized that notable production as reeking with falsehoods and vicious anti-Semitism. In the rabbi's eyes, of course, for to him the entire Christian tradition is a poisonous lie. The whole fabric of Christian truth, especially as it concerns the person of Christ, are, quote, the hallucinations of emotional men and hysterical women, unquote. Thus, says the rabbi, page 127, quote, was invented the cruel story that has caused more misery, more innocent suffering, than any other work of fiction in the range of the whole world's literature. And thus the simple peasants of Oberammergau, presenting the Catholic faith in reverent pageant, are labeled anti-Semites. These are not isolated instances. Antagonism to the Catholic Church runs throughout the Jewish literature. No, the Jewish attitude was summed up in an editorial in the Jewish Sentinel of November 26, 1920, as follows, quote, Our only great historical enemy, our most dangerous enemy, is Rome in all its shapes and forms, and in all its ramifications. Whenever the sun of Rome begins to set, that of Jerusalem rises. These, however, are matters well known to Catholic leaders. And, of course, you know that's directly against what I believe. I believe that Christianity is destructive to whites. And, of course, we would see that the Jews have put up with and tolerated Christianity for 2,000 years. They're not actually afraid of it. They know how to work it. They know how to turn it to their own advantage. And what the Jews actually hate and fear is white racialism that supersedes Christianity because it's specific to whites rather than the general Catholicity of Christianity. And so when a white force arose in the world, and MacDonald would say that the Nazis were un-Western because they weren't individual-focused, they were focused on the group, and it threatened to extinguish Jewish Bolshevism, remove Jewish influence entirely, let alone Jewish control, but Jewish influence entirely from the Western world, the Jews did everything they could to drag all the Christian nations into the fight to destroy it, not to limit it or control it or try to use it, because they couldn't do those things with German nationalism, which was really Aryan representation. General Aryan representation, racial representation, not just German nationalism, because they had at least 1 million men from other countries under arms who voluntarily, signed up to fight with them. That was perceived by the Jews as a real threat, and they stamped it completely out in terms of killing its carriers. Of course, the idea persists and will always persist until whites enjoy their final triumph. So that's the truth of the matter, whereas they're easily able to subvert Christianity because it isn't based on anything solid. In their turn, the other Christian denominations have been attacked. When the Methodists put on a great pageant entitled The Wayfarer, Rabbi Stephen S. Wise, probably the most famous American rabbi of the first half of the 20th century, 1900 to 1950, played critic and made the solemn and silly statement that had he been a South Sea Islander instead of the itinerant platform performer which he is, his first impulse after seeing The Wayfarer would have been to rush out in the street and kill at least 3 Jews. It says a great deal, perhaps, for the channel in which Rabbi Wise's impulses run, but the tens of thousands of Methodists who saw The Wayfarer will not be inclined to attribute such a criticism to the spirit of tolerance which Rabbi Wise so zealously counsels the Christians to observe. The Episcopal Church, that's the church of a lot of our presidents, the high-end Christianity, has also felt the attack of the Jews. Recently, the Jewish press raised a clamor that the Episcopal Church was not competent to teach Americanism in our cities because it held that Christianity and good citizenship were synonymous. And when the Episcopal Church made provision for mission work among the Jews, the torrent of abuse that was poured out gave a very vivid picture of what the Jewish mind naturally turns to when aroused. This abuse is not reproduced here because of its excessive violence and disrespect. It is similar to that which is heaped upon all attempts to explain Christianity to the Jews. What would the Gentiles do if we sent Jewish missionaries to them? Ask the violent editors. Any Gentile can answer that. Nay, even the Jews can answer that. In the first place, the Jews do not want to teach their religion to Gentiles because there is a Talmudical restriction against it. Talmudically, Gentiles are not good enough to mingle with the religious matters of the Jews. In the second place, the Jews do send missionaries everywhere, not to spread Jewish religious principles, but propaganda favoring the Jews as a race and a people, as is done in our colleges through the so-called Jewish Chautauqua. In the third place, let there be produced one Jewish missionary who has ever received anything but considerate reception wherever he has appeared. The Jews are bitter against all Christian denominations because of the conversion of numerous Jews to them. A large number of Jews have become Catholics. One of the Knights of Columbus' most useful lecturers against the menace of radical socialism is a converted Jew. It is so also with the Presbyterian Church, which has been the most recent victim of Jewish vituperation. But only upon the Catholic Church has the Jew poured more wrath and malediction than he has poured upon Christian Science. Okay, that's a religion that I was raised to attend. The Christian Science Church has attracted large numbers of Jewish converts. Now, that is the first time I've ever heard that. And in my 20 years of going to Christian Science Church, I never met a single person who is a former Jew. They were almost all fairly well off, upper middle class. Now, granted, that's my own family's background. Just ordinary whites, mostly, if anything, it skews more New England, like English type. It's more of a WASP type thing than like a German type thing, like baptism or Methodism. But no, I never met a single person who had ever been Jew and converted to it. But that's an interesting, I've literally never seen that claim before. All I recall of we had non-Jews, we had like one kid named Sandip who was an Indian. Beyond that, and I attended the church in California, in Illinois, in Utah, all white. Not really any coloreds at all compared to any other Christianity, and no Jews and maybe one non-white is all I can recall in basically 2 decades of going to Christian Science Sunday School. And Christian Scientists go to Sunday School until they're 20. And I never went to the church, just to the Sunday school. You know, if I was home in college or whatever, and then faithfully we went every week pretty much when I was a kid. So this is interesting. But back then, I find this very dubious because I've also read a fair amount about Christian Science, and I've never seen anyone ever claim that they had a lot of Jewish converts in it. So I don't know what he's talking about. Some of them have become very active, devoted members of that form of faith. Scores of columns and pages have been devoted to their denunciation in Jewish newspapers, magazines, and books. Christian Science is a peculiar anathema to the Jew. This must be something that was, it must have been briefly popular in certain areas in the Northeast and attracted some, assuming he's telling the truth, converts, but I've never seen anyone write about that at all. Anyway, where then is the religious prejudice? Search through the publications of all the churches named, and you cannot find it in all their history. So much of the spirit of prejudice and persecution as you can find expressed in the Jewish press in one single day. Jewry reeks with such prejudice. In politics, education, social functions, public holidays, literature, and newspapers, they see everywhere traces of, quote, Christological manifestations and cry them down. And now in italics, no public man has ever given public evidence of his Christian faith without rebuke from the Jews. Mr. Bryan, Mr. Marshall, Mr. Taft, Mr. Wilson, two of them presidents, one of them vice president, and the other secretary of state, have all been taken to task from time to time for their sins in this respect. Mr. Marshall is a devout man whose faith is real to him, and he speaks very naturally about it at times. He has, therefore, been attacked oftener in the Jewish press than has any other public man of recent times. Nothing is more ludicrous to the Jewish press than a vice president of the United States openly confessing that he is an idolater, that is, a worshiper of the dead Jewish impostor whom the Christians ignorantly call Christ. To Mr. Marshall's honor, be it said, he never apologized. He never begged to withdraw his public statements. Neither did William J. Bryan, whose lecture, The Prince of Peace, contained statements in honor of Christ, which brought him into conflict with Jewish spokesmen everywhere, and whose remarks about missions after a trip around the world were savagely attacked by Jews. Mr. Bryan did not apologize either. Mr. Taft was promptly called down on several occasions for using forms of the word Christian, which were particularly offensive to the Jewish press, because they had advertised far and wide the Taft campaign, that Mr. Taft was practically a Jew in his belief in that he had abandoned all the distinctive Christian doctrines pertaining to Christ. After his lapses in which he used the term Christian approvingly, it was explained on his behalf, 1, that he was accommodating himself to the audience, and 2, that he used the term as a synonym for civilization. But isn't it significant that the name of Christ should be an integral part of the very name of the highest civilization? Mr. Taft was a true liberal, liberal enough to tolerate Christian orthodoxy, and that was a rather weak spot as far as the Jews' estimate of him went. Mr. Wilson, while president, was very close to the Jews. His administration, as everyone knows, was predominantly Jewish. So we're used to thinking of FDR as the first main Jew president, but in fact, that dishonor is probably reserved better for Wilson. As a Presbyterian elder, Mr. Wilson had occasional lapses into the Christian mode of thought during his public utterances and was always checked up tight by his Jewish censors. In 1914, speaking before the American University at Washington, he said, quote, "That is the reason why scholarship has usually been most fruitful when associated with religion, and scholarship has never been, so far as I can at the moment recall, associated with any religion except the religion of Jesus Christ." That was terrible. So terrible that Herman Bernstein was chosen to administer the castigation. And Mr. Wilson made proper reparation. Quote, "My dear Mr. Bernstein, I am sorry that there would have been any unfair implication in what I said at the opening of the American University. You may be sure that there was nothing of the kind in my mind, or very certainly nothing in my thoughts, that would discriminate in the important matter you speak of against Judaism. I find that one of the risks and penalties of extemporaneous speaking is that you do not stop to consider the whole field, but address yourself merely to the matter in hand. With sincere respects and appreciation, cordially yours, Woodrow Wilson." The headline given this notice in the Jewish press was, "He did not mean it," in quotes. All of the president's offending took place in 1914. The second offense he gave was by taking the position of honorary chairman of the International Lord's Day Congress, which was to be held the next year in connection with the Panama Exposition. It was, however, the Christian Sunday which received the bulk of the abuse on that occasion. The subject is religious prejudice, quote unquote. Where does it exist in this country in more continuous and virulent character than among the Jews? Read these selected items selected at random from Jewish papers. Quote, "District Grand Lodge No. 4, Independent Order, B'nai B'rith, voted at the annual election held in San Francisco, March 2, 1911, to exclude from the order Jews who joined the Christian Science Church. The body, after earnest discussion, decided that the portals of the order shall be closed against the Christian Scientist Jews on the ground that such Jews have abjured Judaism. The vote upon the question was almost unanimous." Unquote. Quote, new example. "The Jewish community of Philadelphia has found it necessary to publish a warning to the Jewish people against the daily vacation Bible schools which are being established in various parts of the city, also against certain missions and settlement houses, all of which are traps into which Jewish children are decoyed for the purpose of seducing them from the religion of their parents. These institutions belong to a class of conversionist agencies which wage a campaign for the seeking of converts through workers, who are a class of criminals that keep just within the law and deserve no better treatment than is usually accorded to people of that kind." Unquote. When a bishop of the Episcopal Church said, quote, "We must make the United States indisputably a Christian nation," unquote, the Jewish press retorted that such a thing could not be done until the Constitution of the United States had been, quote, abolished, unquote. "Christian America," in quotes, is a persecuting term, according to the professional Jewish spokesman, and the most laborious efforts have been put forth by them to prove on paper that the United States is not and cannot be Christian. Not only do the Jews disagree with Christian teaching, which is their perfect right and no one dares question it, but they seek to interfere with it. It is not religious tolerance in the midst of religious difference, but religious attack that they preach and practice. The whole record of the Jewish opposition to Christmas, Easter, and certain patriotic songs shows that. When Cleveland and Lakewood arranged for a community Christmas, the Cleveland Jewish Press said, "The writer of this has no idea how many Jews there are in Lakewood, but if there is only one, there should be no community Christmas, no community religion of any kind. That is not a council of tolerance, it is a council of attack. The Christian literature of American Judaism is fiercer than the flames of the Inquisition. In the month of January, the Jewish press has urged its readers to begin an early campaign against Christmas celebrations the next Christmas. Only 360 days before Christmas, quote, so let us do our Christmas arguing early and take plenty of time to do it. If anything, Easter is attacked yet more bitterly. But we refrain, for good reasons, from repeating what Jews commonly say on such occasions. The strange inconsistency of it all is to see the great department stores of the Levies and Isaacs and the Goldsteins and the Silvermans filled with brilliant Christmas cheer and at Easter with the goods appropriate to the time. The festivals of the heathen, quote-unquote, are very profitable. Jewish merchants have been chided for this, not overly severely, by certain rabbis. But on the whole, the rabbis had better remain content, for there are no forces more rapidly secularizing the two festival days than are the merchandising and profiteering forces. Even religious intolerance has its gleesome moments, and the Jews come whenever the signs appear of the greater secularization of the church. One parallel between the protocols and the real hopes of the Jews is written in the common Jewish prophecy that Christianity is doomed to perish. It will perish by becoming, to all intents and purposes, Judaism. And it will become Judaism first by ousting all the doctrines pertaining to the person of Christ, excising from the Gospels the great I Ams, which are his distinctive teachings concerning himself, and second, by devitalizing Christianity of all the spiritual content which flows from a union of faith with a person believed to be divine. That is the only way it can be done. There may be a union of all the churches of the Christian faith because the fundamentals are the same. No union of Christianity and Judaism can occur unless Judaism takes in Jesus as the Messiah or unless Christianity ejects him as the Messiah. Judaism sees the union coming by the ejection of the Lord as the Messiah and rejoices at every sign of it. Dr. Charles F. Aked, A-K-E-D, who has since blossomed out as a Jewish spokesman, delivered a sermon in which he cast aside all the supernatural elements in the life of Christ, from his birth to the significance of his death, and was hailed by the Jewish press as, quote, the fulfillment of the prophecy that within 50 years the religion of all the American people outside the Catholic Church would be Judaism in principle, even though not in name. No Jew, says the American Israelite, quote, will conceal his gratification when he finds Christians virtually admitting that liberal Christianity is practically an acceptance of the doctrine of liberal Judaism. Unfortunately, says Henry Ford, this is true. Liberal Christianity and liberal Judaism meet, but only by the surrender of all that is distinctively Christian in doctrine. A liberal Christian is more Jewish than Christian. The statement may sound harsh and arouse resentment, but it is a very simple matter for any liberal Christian to convince himself of this by reading the volume of liberal Jewish doctrine put out by Kaufman Kohler, president of the Hebrew Union College. Liberalism is the funnel by which Christianity is expected to run into Judaism, just as liberalism, so-called in other departments of life, is expected to bring about certain other Jewish aims. Liberalism in Jewish thought means a wide-open country in every way. Judaism has opposed every significant reform that has come to the country. Prohibition, Sunday decency, movie and stage regeneration, and community reverence for sacred things. Judaism has been the prop of the liquor traffic, Sunday desecration, movie and stage excesses, and public contempt for the sacred things of the prevailing religion, and it is all too evident that the Jewish propaganda has made serious inroads everywhere. A congregational church in New Jersey decided to abandon the Bible in some of its classes and substitute sociology, politics, municipal government, and kindred subjects for study, and the Jewish press hailed it as another sign that the church was, quote, in a fair way to adopt what is in substance American Judaism, so replace individual salvation in Christ with social gospel, that the only valid part of Christianity is helping the poor, which is the Jewish secular liberal program for whites, essentially. And we see where that leads today. 100 years later, that would lead not just to helping the poor, but actively hating oneself, considering oneself a racial genetic criminal merely for existing. This is how sick and sad it would become 10 decades later. In St. Louis, a clergyman, instead of preaching sermons, began to act out moralistic dramas which he himself had written, and the Jewish press again hailed it as a sign of the dissatisfaction of the Christian with his church. Everything done in every branch of the Christian church has been closely watched, and whenever a departure occurred from the distinctly Christian position, it was extravagantly applauded, and wherever loyalty to the landmarks appeared, it was just as extravagantly condemned. Judaism does not wish the Christian church to remain Christian. This accounts for destructive higher criticism being almost exclusively the work of Jews, although the world has long known them under the guise of German critics. These are ones who try to trace the historical or historicity, the actual factual historical actuality of what's found in the Bible. And that was a movement in Germany, and they're saying it was actually Jews doing that. Just the way today that they would blame Germans instead of a Jewish communist for communism. Karl Marx would be called by the duped conservatives a German rather than what he was, which was a Jew, the relevant part. Jewish intolerance today, yesterday, and in every age of history where Jews were able to exert influence or power is indisputable, except among people who do not know the record. Jewish intolerance in the past is a matter of history. For the future, it is a matter of Jewish prophecy. One of the strongest causes militating against the full Americanization of several millions of Jews in this country is their belief, instilled in them by their religious authorities, that they are chosen, that this land is theirs, that the inhabitants are idolaters, that the day is coming when the Jews will be supreme. How can they otherwise act than in agreement with such declarations? You can see what is meant if you read Jewish articles describing the shoving aside of the New England people by the Jews. The supercilious attitude adopted toward the stock that made America is merely a foreshadowing of what would be the complete attitude if power and influence made it possible. Bolshevism, which began with the destruction of the class that contained all the promise of a better Russia, is an exact parallel for the attitude that is adopted in this country regarding the original stock. We are not permitted by the Jews to sing the Battle Hymn of the Republic in our schools because one of the stanzas has a Christian flavor. The Jews claim that the presence of one Jewish child in any assembly of children ought, in fairness, to prevent the singing of that historic song. Norman Hapgood, writing in a Jewish publication, said, "I need hardly explain that I do not think Jews ought to insist overmuch on their rights or nationality in a negative sense. They ought to be as much Jews as they can, but ought to be as little as possible of what is merely anti-Christian. For the Jews to try to get a song out of the public schools because it praises Jesus is perhaps natural, but hardly wise." Mr. Hapgood received a lot of abuse for his well-conceived counsel. Again, we come to the end of our space with the record hardly scratched. Sufficient has been presented to show the strong, unceasing anti-Christian activity of the Jews in the United States. Had the Jewish press been read extensively by non-Jews during the past 15 years, this present series of articles would have been unnecessary. The people would have known the facts. It is to present some of these facts that are illustrated in the Jewish press along the lines of religious intolerance that these two articles have been written. That's chapters 43 and this 44 that we're coming to the conclusion of. Jewish spokesmen plead for the suppression of facts in the name of religious tolerance, and they denounce exposure of facts as being religious persecution. Read the whole non-Jewish and secular publications and you will not find 1/100,000th part of the animosity against the Jewish religion, which is found in the Jewish press, continuously found, week after week, for long years, against the Christian religion. The present writer has never seen nor heard of an article attacking the Jews' religion. So, once for all, in spiking the cry of religious persecution, we show that it exists in quantity and strength among the Jews, and nowhere else. No one imbued with the American spirit would or could condemn, hinder, or even remonstrate with any person on account of the faith he holds. As to religious prejudice or persecution entering into the present series of articles, there they are, reprinted in booklet form for permanent examination. Where is the prejudice or persecution? Cite the page. Jewish spokesmen would use their energy to better advance, a better advantage, and more to the honor of the Jewish people, if they would address themselves to what is in the articles rather than to what is not in them. The statements made by the Dearborn Independent have been voluminously discussed, but they are still awaiting an answer. And of course, Ford asks in vain. The Jews will never answer argument with argument, for they have no argument. They will never do that. They've never done that in 100 years. Their attempt is always to deny and suppress and to lie. They're never going to answer your arguments because they don't have any arguments. They act the way... It's like I've said, and it cannot be summed up any better than the twist on Mark Twain's word. The Jews are the only people who control the media or need to. Why do they need to? Because they can't tell the truth about themselves, and they can't let anyone else tell the truth either, because they're a tiny minority bent on controlling a large majority and operating it in the name of an agenda that is genocidal to that racial majority. So, to know the Jews is to hate them and desire their extinction. That's what I'm saying, not Henry Ford. That's what I'm saying. Ford did not go far enough, as we now know 100 years later. Anyway, that was chapter 44 about religious persecution, which is Jewish against Christian, rather than Christian against Jewish, facts be known. And you can verify that, he says, by reading basically any Jewish publication at any time. It's continuous, he said, repeatedly. That was published in 11 June 1921 in the Dearborn Independent. Anyway, thanks for being with me today, and I'll be back with you again real soon.